It's time.
It's time.
It's time. It's time.
It's time.
Time.
It's time.
Time to think about the things that you otherwise wouldn't say. Lucky for us, these two will say anything.
Come on!
It's time for The Fawcast with Chris Williams and Mark Charter. The Fawcast is powered by Charterhouse Real Estate. Why pay 7% to list your home? Choose the flexible 5 or 6% plan for you at charterhouseiowa.com.
Hear more from Mark following this episode.
Listen very carefully.
Shall we do this then?
No, just take it one time.
An audio experience unlike any other starts now.
Welcome to the Charterhouse Real Estate headquarters here in Ankeny. Special guest this week, the Godfather is here, John Walters. Welcome to the program. Do you know what you're getting into?
Not really.
Do you ever listen to a podcast?
I got to admit, I've got the shirt. I've got the Fawcast shirt,
which I wear
frequently, but I haven't been a regular listener to the Fawcast. I got to start doing that. I'm not a big podcast guy, even though I do one.
You do. I love the Sidecast.
But I got to start listening. I've heard they're good.
I listen to the Sidecast. How often? Like, is it a weekly deal, or do you just kind of float with it?
Just kind of float with it. But you know, there's weeks where I'll do two or three, and then there's I might go 3 weeks without doing one. I think it's going to start becoming one a week because Learfield's jumping on board with it now too. So it's going to become probably about once a week. But it's fun. Catching up with former athletes or current coaches and athletes, it's just a fun thing to do, just to spend 10, 15 minutes with them. I keep them fairly short, but just visited with Cantrell Horton. That's our latest one. And what a great guy. I mean, it was so much fun to talk to him about those championship teams. And
it's funny.
That reunion was great.
Man. Rob just did a – yeah, that's where I was going to go with you. Rob just did a deal with Cantrell, and he's like in love with Cantrell Horton,
yes,
too. Like, he must just be a phenomenal dude.
He is. And, he hadn't been back to Iowa State since he played.
Yeah.
And think about that. 99, 2000, 2000, 2001 – back-to-back Big 12 regular season championships outright, unbelievable. And never lost a game in Hilton Coliseum, never lost to Kansas. He and Tinsley were an amazing backcourt. And so I was surprised to hear that he had never been back on campus since he was done. And that's one of the great things that Coach Prohm did, was he brought a lot of guys back that hadn't been back in a long time and rekindled that memory for a lot of those guys, and they just really appreciated it. It was a fun weekend. It was really a great thing that Prohm did, and he did it for totally selfless reasons.
That's him.
He is. He is a really selfless guy that wanted these guys. He says it's about the players, and he means it. And he put his money where his mouth is with that event.
The Shirley column really kind of put a cherry on top for me.
Cause that was cool.
Paul, even me as a fan, I like Paul Shirley. I read his book. Like, he's a talented guy. It still rubbed me the wrong way, some comments that I would read from him and hear from him about Iowa State, just because I love Iowa State so much. That – I almost got a little emotional reading that, because it was cool to see him kind of come back around,
Yeah.
I don't think he ever disliked Iowa State, but
no.
I think if you didn't know Paul and you just were reading text like I was 10 years ago, you could go, well, who the hell does this guy think he is?
Well, he's always been opinionated, and he's always been out there a little bit. But, Paul was from Meridian, Kansas, and he had hoped to get an offer from Kansas, to play basketball there, and didn't. But he was such a smart guy that he got an academic scholarship. Tim Floyd was able to bring him in. Tim was pretty creative with his recruiting. And he said, hey, this guy is mechanical engineering, I believe it was, and really intelligent and 4.0 student. We'll bring him in and put him on an academic scholarship. And they did. And he turned out to be a pretty good basketball player.
Yeah.
He played in the NBA and played overseas for a long time. But, I think and he talked about it in his article about, it was harsh. It wasn't always easy.
Yeah.
And I think he's I think he's grown to appreciate Iowa State more as the years have gone on. And I think a lot of guys do that, Chris. I think, you know, you graduate and you move on with your life and you get caught up in your day-to-day stuff. And then a few years later, you know, next thing you know, you look and it's been 20 years, you know. And then when some of these guys come back, I think they have an even greater appreciation for it because it hasn't really been a part of their lives for a while. And then all of a sudden to bring it back into their lives, that, hey, this is cool. This is what really changed my life was being here. And that's what Cantrell said. You know, it's changed the trajectory of my life was the way he put it. And that's a great way to put it. And so I think for those guys, there's a certain reminiscing that happens and that, you know, it just brings back some good feelings for them that that they did some special things while they were here.
What was the highlight of the weekend for you, just being around there?
I think that visit with Cantrell highlighted it for me. But seeing Stevie Johnson get up there and speak, he was great. You know, seeing Fred come back was really cool.
I didn't know he was coming. That was a surprise.
And he didn't make it real public. You know, I think Fred just kind of wanted to come back and see the guys and didn't necessarily want to be the center of attention. And so he wasn't. And that was good. And I think one thing that was really cool was Coach Prohm. He had three guys speak, and he really wanted to do different generations.
Yeah.
And so he had Gary Thompson speak. The Rolling Rocket was perfect, you know, to talk about that playing in the Armory and beating Wilt in Kansas and all that stuff. And then he had Stevie Johnson, who played for Tim Floyd and Larry. It was a good representative of that area. And then George Niang.
Johnson, one of the more popular Cyclones of all time, I would say.
Yep.
And he's a guy who always gets brought up by people.
Yeah, and Stevie Johnson has the distinction of playing on the winningest basketball team in Iowa State history and playing on the winningest football team Iowa State history.
That's
as a starter
crazy.
For both. And both really the same calendar year, 2000, you know, the 32-win basketball team. And then he goes over and he's on the 9-win Insight Bowl championship team for Iowa State football. And but a guy who was totally selfless. He was a great scorer coming out of Mississippi. Came in with that reputation. Tim Floyd recruited him. And everybody thought, okay, this guy's going to be a big-time scorer. Well, he wasn't really asked to do that. He didn't have a lot of range on his jump shot. But he was such a team-first guy that he just did whatever they asked him.
Yeah.
And when you're just sitting there collecting Jamal Tinsley passes, you're going to and get layups, you're going to shoot 63%, 64%. That's what Stevie did. But he was a good defender, tough, hard-nosed guy that just was team first, really selfless guy. And he's always been one of my favorites.
I feel like there's two guys who fans, including me, are always like, man, if we could have only had a Stevie Johnson on that team, him and Homan.
Yeah,
are the I two mean, guys that are always like, man, the we only had Homan on this team.
You need guys like that. You do. And, you know, I think teams are more successful when they have guys that just are willing to accept the roles no matter what that role is. And, you know, thinking about like a Joel Lanning in football now, it's just I don't care where I'm playing. I just want to win. I just want to be out there and helping in any way I can and win. And when you get that selflessness within the walls of your locker room, that's when you really have a chance to do something special.
I think that let me ask you real quick, and Mark just got here. If you guys were wondering where Mark was, he's been late at the meeting. So I got a text the other day from, I'll just keep it really vague, but somebody who's been at all the practices that said that Joel is just playing out of his mind at linebacker. And I don't want to hype up expectations for the guy too much, but like, what's funny is I think the outsiders, I don't think they comprehend how good Matt and the guys think that Joel can actually be at linebacker.
I think they don't set a low bar for Joel. You know? I mean, I think they have expectations for him. Now, there's a lot of unanswered questions. I mean, it's going to be challenging. I mean, teams are going to test him. They're going to try to see if they can get him out of position. And, you know, and he's excited about that challenge. That's what's fun about it. He's really excited about it. And he has been playing well. John Haycock talked about it last night. He said that he's done really well. And he said, you know, the first few days, it was just kind of, you know, especially in the spring ball when he made the change, it was just kind of wide-eyed and bushy-tailed and trying to figure it out, you know. And with every single day he sees improvement, and now he's using his instincts more. And when you can get to that point, I think especially as a linebacker, it's about seeing and reacting. It's not about doing things necessarily by the book. It's about seeing a play develop in front of you, reacting, you trusting your instincts. And Joel's a good instinctive player, and I think that that gives him a real chance at that position. But it's going to be fun to watch him play. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well.
Hey, Mark.
Hey! welcome to the podcast, the Charterhouse podcast.
I'm a horrible host. I was late to my own office, my own show.
So. Sorry. The Godfather and I just let ourselves in.
We did.
Katie helped you.
Helped ourselves. We've just been...
I see you helped yourself to a protein.
Yeah. What is this? I don't know. I wanted something. I didn't want to pop, and I didn't want water. What is this that I'm drinking?
John, are you aware of what we do here? Right? This is not a PG show all the time.
That was the most substantial start of a podcast.
All right,
ever.
So what are you drinking? That was described to me this way the other day. It tastes like the aftertaste of a sexual encounter.
Oh, Mark.
Very nice.
That's what I was told it tastes like.
Welcome, Mark, to the program.
So that's what I bring.
Drink up, C-dubs.
Yeah, so good luck to you. No, we bought those, and I never actually had one. My wife brought them from home and said, put these in your office.
It's not bad, actually. I don't think it's bad. It's called Protein 2.0.
Looks like it's got all your food groups.
It's a great name. It's a great name if you can't even tell what it's called. Protein 2, there's no point.
It's got 15 grams of protein, zero sugar.
Sounds healthy.
And zero carbs.
No smoothie today?
No.
You didn't make the stop down there?
No, I haven't. Actually, I had to get the oil changed to my truck there at Tuffy, you know?
Yeah.
And I was at Starbucks while I was waiting for it. And Lawrence Cunningham stopped by.
LC! Nice.
Yeah, I just ran into LC.
What's he doing down here?
He had a meeting with, he was in a suit. He was hobnobbing with somebody important.
LC is one of those guys. He's been on here a few times.
I know.
He knows everybody.
Yeah.
He knows everybody. He knows where the bodies are buried up at Iowa State. and we like to have him on there. He's actually going on my every year we have a Vegas trip, which I don't know if we should talk about that today, by the way. There's a good topic to talk about to bury our old host on. But
yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. No, LC and I go back a ways, and he's one of those unique guys that's never applied for a job in his life. Do you know anybody like that? Like, he just gets – people meet him and they're like, you should come work for me.
Yeah, that's a good feeling, probably.
One of those guys.
Yeah.
He's one of those. So the what I wanted to ask you was, obviously, you've got the coolest nickname around, the Godfather.
I didn't give myself that. That's the guy next to me here that came up with that.
Well, it was – I mean, it was kind of just like lingering around and like in the inner circles. We called you that. And then Hoiberg tweeted that one day.
And that was over. It was over.
I mean, if the mayor tweets something, it's
we've had these discussions before, though. You cannot give yourself a nickname. Fred didn't say, I'm the mayor.
No.
You didn't say I'm the Godfather, but my example of that, to bring up an old Iowa State coach's name, so when Steve Loney coached at Iowa State.
I love Steve
Loney. He was known as, I think his nickname up there was Big Dog, something like that, something very similar to that.
You got to let the big dog eat.
Yeah, and his son Matt, I ran track with Matt at Ames High.
Okay.
And Matt one day shows up at practice and starts demanding that people call him Little Pup. he had given himself a nickname, and that lasted exactly 8 minutes.
It can't happen.
And you cannot give yourself a nickname. But if you're going to have one, Godfather's pretty.
This reminds me of the Seinfeld episode where George wanted to be called T-Bone.
Yeah.
And everybody was calling him Coco the monkey.
T-Bone!
All right, so what was your nickname when you were a kid, Mark?
I don't know that I ever had one.
Never had a nickname ever?
So here is it. Well, I probably did. I probably still do from some people, but nothing that I would want. But
come on, it's the podcast. You have to tell us.
Spill your guts day.
Well, so the thing is, I'm not a big fan of you having to bleep things, but like the joke, like with my wife and close friends and stuff, is I'm a pretty outspoken guy. I'm the guy that's going to say things that people won't say. So when I say something like I just said a few minutes ago, people say, "Effing Charter." Like, you know, so
that's a lot.
That becomes the nickname.
Okay.
But have you noticed that Williams does this to me and pretty much anyone else? They met me a couple times. Very rarely do people call me Mark. It's my name, right? I'm a last name guy.
Charter.
People say Charter, right?
Yeah. Just sounds good.
People, you're mixed. I hear people call you Chris. I hear Williams. But some people our first name guys.
Yep.
Some are last name and some are nickname. And it's not like they self-assign.
Right.
It just becomes that. So I doubt your good friends call you the Godfather.
No.
They call you John. They call you, what do they call you when they're addressing you?
You know, I've had probably more nicknames. When I was a little kid, I was the smallest kid in the class. I was the youngest kid in the class. And they called me Peanut.
Yep.
Yep. Then it just became Nut. And then it became, and then it was Walt. And then it was Wally. And, you know, and now it's, I guess, the Godfather. So, J-Dub.
Chris gets a lot of C-Dub,
yeah,
obviously.
That's what I call him. Yeah.
That's been my nickname since probably second or third grade.
Yeah.
Everybody's always called me that.
Yep. Do Prohm or Campbell have nicknames? Do people refer to them as what is their common, or is it just Coach?
It'd be a good question to ask him.
Like, have you guys heard stuff that you're able to share?
I haven't.
No, I haven't heard a nickname for either one of those guys.
Just
Prohm doesn't come across me as a big nickname guy.
I'll bet he's had them. I'll bet he's had nicknames.
Yeah.
I'll bet everybody has. Everybody's got a few.
Should I text him and see if we can get a response?
Absolutely.
On air. Can you text both? Well, Campbell's busy.
Won't text me back at this hour during fall camp.
He's doing something important. So let me ask you this, Sean, because I don't know if you're aware of this. I know you're good friends with Keith Murphy.
Yeah.
We had him on here, and we discovered a bit of his origin story.
Yeah.
I think a lot of our listeners want to know, how did you get the job that you got, et cetera. Keith's origin story is in Florida, and it had to do with a serial killer. And I don't know if you know the story. I think it was the Gainesville Ripper.
Yeah, the Gainesville Ripper.
Okay.
And actually, we've had requests, and Keith has acknowledged that he wants to do a part two of that.
Do a follow-up.
So the night after, or the night of that podcast, like we brought up so many bad memories for Keith. He went home and stayed up till like 2, 3 in the morning and researched the Gainesville Ripper. He spent decades trying to stay away from that story because it scarred him so much, and Mark brought it all back.
To recap quickly for the people that missed that episode, we would not have Keith Murphy without the Gainesville Ripper. So Keith was a reporter, news guy down in Florida, and he got assigned to that story. Guy killed 7, 8 co-eds at Florida. And Keith had to cover it and hated it.
Yeah.
And decided that I'm going to take the first sports gig anywhere that gets offered to me. And it was in Ames, Iowa.
Yeah.
So without that, we might not have Keith Murphy.
I remember when Keith came to Ames.
So that was, you know.
You were at Channel 8?
Yeah.
So tell us, for people that don't know, which is probably most, like, how did you get from the start of your career to where you are today? That's probably a long story, man.
Yeah.
Feel free to fly through the boring part.
I'm not as young as Keith, so it's got a few more layers. But, no, I just was, like I said, I wasn't the biggest kid. I was not a great athlete. I love sports. I played every day. It's all we did. After school, we get together. We played baseball. We played football. We played basketball. And I wasn't horrible, but I was not a great athlete, okay? And so in a big school in Chicago area, Glen Ellyn, Illinois, I knew I wasn't going to be an athlete, so I loved listening to announcers in Chicago. Mm-hmm. There's so many great announcers. I grew up listening to Jim Durham do the Bulls and Lloyd Pettit do the Blackhawks and Harry Carey. And so I just said, that's what I want to do. And we had a high school radio station, so I started doing it. And ended up in Des Moines because I went to Drake because I wanted a smaller school where I could get real hands-on experience. Mm-hmm. There was no Cyclones.tv then. Otherwise, maybe I'd have ended up at Iowa State.
Yep.
But anyway, long story longer, Pete Taylor hired me at KCCI, and that's how I got started. And always wanted to keep a foot in the door play-by-play, and Pete was nice enough to let me do that. So I did Drake women's games, then I did Drake men's games. Then I did Iowa State men's games on TV, and then switched to radio when Pete passed away. So that's eliminating quite a few details in between, but I worked for Channel 8 for 13 years because you can't just do play-by-play and make a living.
Yeah.
And I made the move to Channel 5 for two reasons. Number one, to get the opportunity to be a sports director in 1996. I'd been in the business long enough that I wanted to be the guy that was making the decisions each day on what we were going to cover. But more importantly, the chance to do games on TV, do Iowa State games with Gary Thompson. That was a big thrill. And so I made that jump, and it's been great, man. It's been you talk about Lawrence Cunningham never having to really apply for a job. I mean, it's funny because I really haven't done much of that either. You know, I went to the news director at Channel 8 at the time was a guy named Paul Rhodes. No relation. Yep. And our professor Drake sent three of us over there. Two of them were qualified. Then there was me. And we went in and interviewed with Paul Rhodes for a news job, just like Keith had.
Yep.
And Paul Rhodes looked in and goes, gosh, it looks like all you've done here is sports. And I said, yeah, it's kind of true. He goes, why don't you go across the hallway and talk to Pete Taylor and see if he needs any help. And so thank God he did.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been
– I'm sure that Paul Rhodes would be so proud of what you've done with your career.
You know, Paul, I worked with Paul for quite a while there at Channel 8. He was the news director and a good guy, great tennis player. And, you know, I had a lot of – it's funny because Channel 8, there's so little turnover that a lot of the people that I worked with there
–
and I only worked there till 96. A lot of the people are still there.
Yeah.
You know, Todd Magle and –
just starting to see some fall off with some retirements
Steve Carlin. I mean, Steve Carlin had my going away party from Channel 8, you know, and he's still there. And good friends.
Must be a good place to work.
I got a text back from Prome on nicknames.
Okay.
What did he come up with? I got to hear this.
He says, I got a couple. One, in high school, when I was a freshman, they called me Feet. I had a big shrew, but I never grew to be 6'5" and a lead guard in the NBA, so that didn't stick. In college, if you talk to any of my friends, they would still refer to me as Buddy. They say that at times today, mainly because I was friends with everyone and looked out for the guys when I was in school at Bama. My wife doesn't have one for me, LOL.
I love it. I love that he responded with that response.
Yeah. Feet.
What a guy.
And Buddy.
That is awesome.
I like
that,
it.
But that's totally Prome, though.
It is.
He is everybody's Buddy.
He is. That's a great nickname for him. Yeah. That's perfect.
I think from what I've heard from you, Chris, anecdotally, I think when people are really, really, really nice people, I think people on the outside sometimes think that has to be fake. And it doesn't sound like it is.
Prome is the most.
With him.
I don't want to say the most because there's a lot of great people at Iowa State. Yeah. But he is as genuine of a head coach at that level that I've ever been around.
Yeah.
He is.
He says, you know, you know, you're right. There are others that are terrific too. But when he says family first, he's not just talking about his wife and two kids. He's talking about his Iowa State basketball family, and he really does consider it that, and it's cool. And you know, for him to reach out and did what he did last week, I'm sure there are a lot of people there that were calling him Buddy.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it was like Johnny Orr. He called everybody Coach because he couldn't remember anybody's name. So everybody was Coach. So maybe everybody was calling him Buddy because they couldn't remember his name was Steve.
It's a great fallback, though. Hey, Coach, Coach.
Yeah. I don't care.
And yet it never gets confusing. Let me ask you. So,
I just told him, too, that I'm just going to start calling him Buddy.
No, not Feet.
He said he's okay with it.
Hey, Feet. Feet's one of the oddest nicknames I've ever heard.
That is a little different, yeah.
You mentioned Pete Taylor. Pete Taylor was a great guy. When I was in school, I had to do a video project for a class that revolved around, we were starting a business, and mine was tickets and sports. He helped me shoot something for that. And then I was writing columns for the Iowa State Daily, and I got to go spend a game with him watching him do that and write a column about him. So he was... no ego at all. Totally willing to help a student.
Yep.
I wouldn't take time out of his day to do that. So
yep.
Sad when he passed away, but obviously that led to you moving to the basketball, et cetera. But let me ask you this. There's a massive difference between doing TV and doing radio.
Uh-huh.
So I'm a big Cubs fan. I see Lynn Casper do TV, and obviously the story kind of tells itself because people can see it. And then I think the best in the business is Pat Hughes on the radio.
Yep, I agree. He's great.
I have XM in my car, so I get a chance to listen to a lot of other radio guys do baseball throughout the country.
Yeah.
And Pat Hughes is so much better than a lot of those guys. So much more descriptive.
Yes. You ever heard Denny Matthews?
Oh, Denny Matthews. They win the World Series, and he acts like it's the third out of the fourth inning.
Royals win.
I mean, that's an acquired taste.
That was actually
taste.
Right on target.
That's an acquired taste for sure.
You got to hear, I think we still have it, Bloom and I, when we were working at KMA together, so we were board hopping Royals games. It was him and Bob Davis.
Yeah.
So
Bob's a great friend.
Bloom and I actually we were waiting to go on the air because we were going to do play-by-play of a high school baseball game, and we couldn't go on the air until like 6:20, and the game started at 6, so we did the first like three innings as Denny Matthews and Bob Davis. Bloom has that somewhere.
I'll bet it was awesome.
Denny Matthews has his own style, but
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's fine. My question is during stream radio and TV, I want to get your take on that, but at the same time, you know, certain like the Rays announcer, whoever it was, you go 3, 4, 5 pitches with no commentary on the game. Yeah. You don't know what's happening at all. What makes those guys better than others? And like, what's your take on the difference between calling radio, calling TV?
Well, what you said, the word you used is descriptive, and that's what radio play-by-play is you want to be as descriptive as possible without going overboard. And I think you can go overboard. And I love Kevin Harlan on TV. Mm-hmm. I think he's awesome on TV. I don't like listening to him on the radio because it's like, you know, a guy standing out there dribbling, he says, it's a chest-high dribble, now it's a knee-high dribble, now it's a waist-high dribble, now it's a chest-high dribble again.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
You know,
he's just dribbling the basketball.
Yeah.
So you can get a little too descriptive at times. But I think what makes Pat Hughes great is he mixes in the humor. He doesn't take himself too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I really miss Ron Santo.
Yeah.
You know, that was so fun when those two guys were together.
Talking about his gamers, like his wigs. And
yeah,
and
just stuff
like that.
Off the beat. You know, but TV play-by-play, the color guy becomes far more of the story. Everybody's watching the game with you.
Yep.
So you're not describing the action as much. You're just kind of having a conversation, and you're setting up the color man as the expert and letting him just kind of tell the story a little bit more.
Yep.
But with radio play-by-play, you really have to let people draw a mental image of what's going on. But just to sidetrack for a minute, one of my favorite Pat Hughes stories was, he and Santo used to take faxes. You know, people would fax in questions. Okay,
for our young listeners out there,
I didn't even know.
So
that.
Cubs fans would just send in these random
during
things.
The game. Yeah,
right.
So,
So Ron Santo, you know, they're in the middle of the game. Here's Ron Santo. Patrick, I got a fax here from Joe in Lombard. It says, "What's the difference between a crocodile and an alligator?" And Pat's like, I don't know, Ronnie. That's a good question. We'll have to think about that one for a while. So anyway, they call the game. And a few minutes later, Santo must have looked it up. And he says, it says here, Patrick, that a crocodile is more brownish in color and has a longer snot. And Pat starts laughing. He says, Ronnie, do you think they meant snout? And then you hear Santo just start laughing, and you can hear the producer laughing in the booth, and everybody's just having a, I mean, that was fun. And to me, this isn't rocket science. This is fun. And that's what I enjoy about working with Eric Hefty. He has a great sense of humor. We have fun together. And that's what it should be. You know, it's still at the heart of it is just a game, you know. And so if you can't have some fun with it, then you're kind of defeating the purpose. And I just think that's one of the really great things about Pat Hughes. He's always having fun there. Yep. He always can tell that he wants to be there. If you can sense that an announcer doesn't really want to be there, or if he wants a game to be over with or whatever, why are you going to invest in listening to that game?
Yeah.
You know, why would I invest my time in something you're not even interested in telling me?
Or you
me?
Don't want to hear him complain and it's the 14th inning and they don't want to be there. You want to assume. Because a lot of people look at those people and say, they have my dream job.
Yes.
Right? A lot of people would like to be Pat Hughes and be able to watch every Cubs game and travel with the team and all of that.
No doubt.
I think they fully understand that. What do you like better, football or basketball? What do you like to do better? Not to get you fired from one of them.
They're so different.
Yeah. They're so different. And at Iowa State, I think it's so unique because I love the football game day environment. I love the whole, every bit of it. From the minute you arrive at the stadium, you know, 4 or 5 hours before kickoff in my case, and you're out there in the parking lots and you see all the Cardinal and gold and you see people just having a great time. And it's like we just talked about with that reunion, you know, rekindling that spirit. You know, for those fans, that's what it's like every week. They love that. And I just love the whole, everything that surrounds a college football game, mm-hmm. I think is just really, really cool. Calling a game inside Hilton Coliseum, when that place gets buzzing, there's nothing like it. And I guess the difference is, with football, I'm calling it from the press box. You're a little bit removed from the roar of the crowd and everything.
Sure.
Basketball, you are right down there in the heart of it, right by the bench, and so that's exciting. But I couldn't pick one over the other. I love them both, but I love them for different reasons. And you know, I think that as Jack Trice Stadium's game day environment continues to get better and better, and I've seen that through my time doing those games, it's becoming a really fun game day environment, and one that's an easy sell when they bring in recruits and they show them that game day environment. It's a pretty easy sell if they can just get them on the campus. And so it's becoming more and more like the advantage that Hilton is, and that's kind of cool
to
see. I think
definitely you have to appreciate the fact from just your occupation perspective that when our teams are good versus not, your job has to get so much better when we're good.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Even like games we lose, take Baylor last year when we played Baylor. Close game.
Great
crowd,
game.
Exciting game. Yeah. You know, lots of scoring going on.
Yep.
Versus, you know, a year where we're 1-11
Yep.
Stuff. You're like, oh, man, I got to go to the game today. You may still like your job, but it's tougher to fill the time.
No question. And like Eric says, you know, the margin between winning and losing is often just razor thin.
Yeah.
But the difference in the way you feel with winning and losing is night and day. And that's so true, you know. And you get close to these guys and you appreciate the work that they put into it. I mean, that's the thing. I think for me, being around the football program constantly, seeing how much effort, the long days, there's just so much that goes into those 12 opportunities in the fall. And so you want so badly to see those guys get rewarded with wins. You do get close to it. You do get attached, and you want them to win. There's no doubt. And you feel their pain when they don't. But there's no better feeling than getting on a plane on the road after beating somebody that you weren't expected to beat, you know, in football or basketball, get on that plane with that team and seeing those smiles, that makes it all worth it. It's really fun.
That what he just said reminds it kind of reminds me of this podcast. Because, you know,
here comes a reach.
No, listen. No, you'll
he's,
know
he's
what I'm
going somewhere.
You'll know what I, you'll, so, like, after a loss, I'm much more sympathetic than you are.
Yeah, because you know them?
Well, it's because, like, I know how hard Paul Rhodes was trying.
You've got the toughest job in the world. I call it the Cyclone Overreaction Show.
Yeah.
It's the toughest job in the world to talk people off the ledge right after a tough loss.
Well, not only that, but you guys have very different jobs. You're both in sports media, but your job, you're okay being a total homer, right? You're the voice of the school. You shouldn't be like, coach should be fired today, right?
Yeah. I mean, you try to be level-headed and give credit to the other team where it's due. But at the same time, yes, you don't want there to be any doubt which team you want to win.
But here's what's challenging for Chris. Now, you may say, I'm not a journalist. I run a, you know, Cyclone Fanatic website or whatever, which is true. But at the same time, if push comes to shove and it's time for a coach to be fired and you need to write that piece, you're texting them at the same time. I mean, at Iowa State, it's a small town. It's Ames. You might be more connected to coaches than they are in New York City or Chicago or whatever. You do form personal relationships with coaches,
doubt.
Which makes your job tough.
Well, that's why I said, like at the end of the Paul era, like, I would come in here and you're furious because you're a fan and you're a donor and you want to win. And, and I could see, like, the writing on the wall, obviously, but it was like, it's not like Paul's not trying, you know,
and
John just described is the connection you form. And it's not always like friendship. It's more of a, like, you just want to see people succeed who are good people who work hard.
Yeah.
And usually, pretty much always at that level, if you get fired, it's not because you're not trying, you know, because lazy people don't get to that role, right?
Yeah, right.
And,
exactly.
And especially with a guy like Paul, and I hate to just use him as the example, but he's the latest. Yep. But he was so personally connected to this community, specifically Ankeny, and just Iowa State in general. It's like, man, you end up. I obviously want Iowa State to win every time they take the floor, but I root for the people just as much.
Like, me too.
I want the Iowa State women's basketball team to win, but I root for Bill because he's just a great guy, too.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I agree with you 100%. Yeah. And if you want to hear as low as I've ever sounded on the radio, go back and listen to the final minute of that Kansas State game when we knew that was it for Paul Rhodes. Because you're right. You pull for those guys. You appreciate what they've done. Paul can look himself in the mirror and know that he gave Iowa State absolutely everything he had.
And that's
the feeling you have to walk away with. And, you know, he was so gracious when he left and sent cards to a lot of people he was close with and said, you know, I gave it everything I had. And nobody would doubt that. And so you get in the business knowing that there's a good chance that at some point that's the way it's going to end. That's part of it, you know, and it sucks, but it's reality. And there's no question that the closeness with the coaches, some of them do become good friends. You know, just saw Dan McCarney the other day. It was great to see him again. I think that's my favorite part of the job. I think that's what I like the most about it is you do get to get close to these guys and get to know them on a personal level and appreciate them. And yeah. I think that's what I enjoy about it as much or more than anything.
I've enjoyed getting to know assistants who move on.
Yeah.
So,
good
I
guys.
Mean, I have like 10 different favorite teams now.
I watch assistants or coaching.
Well, I watch every Utah State game, I
sure.
think, because of Luke Wells. He's a guy who still, every time he's in the Midwest, will text me, and he'll be like, hey, I just saw a Busch Light billboard. It made me think of you, right?
T.J.
Like,
Otzelberger.
Yeah. Tom Herman now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a Texas
yep.
fan now, as, mm-hmm. as hard as that might be.
The kissing thing's weird.
That's just what he does.
Did he do that at Iowa State?
Oh, yeah. He kissed me. I've been kissed by Herman
really?
Multiple times. Yeah.
He's kissing reporters?
He never kissed me.
That's just weird to me.
He kisses people. That's just what he...
Well, okay, I get that.
Never,
that's
like,
his thing.
But
societally,
it was never like at a press conference Herman would kiss. It would be like at a Gridiron Club event or
okay.
at a...
I wonder where that
came
from.
That's just him. It's
his
not,
dad did it?
He doesn't think twice about it. He'll just... That's like his way of saying
in
hello.
In some countries, that's perfectly normal.
We're not one of them.
John, I put it up that you were going to be on the podcast, and some fans wanted to ask you some questions.
Fire away, man.
Are you good with that, Mark, or do you have anything else?
My question is your call-in show the worst part of your job? That's my question. And the only reason, the only reason I say that is, I get it. It's your job. I'll speak badly about your job. You don't have to do it yourself. Yeah. But as a listener, it's so brutal listening to calls from, 80-year-old Helen. Yeah. That wants to tell you about the drape she just put up in the living room.
Helen from Ames?
You're like, oh, no.
No, it's Barb from Ames. She's a frequent
And everyone listening is like, get to the point.
Yeah.
Get to the point.
You know, I think the Iowa State fan base is what makes Iowa State so special in athletics. And so I would never say anything bad about our fan base. They're awesome. I mean, and what I always tell people that complain about the callers is call. Yeah. I give the number 6 million times.
Great point.
If you can call and do better than the people that are calling, please do. We beg you to call.
We'd love it.
And so we want to get new callers. But, some of those guys, they do kind of form their own. Everybody knows Bob from Durham. And
Here's
knows
a guy from Florida.
Denny
Roger?
From Roger from Lake City, Florida. Yeah, and Denny from Clear Lake. And, we do that Cyclone feud on the tailgate tour in the summer. And we just thought it'd be fun to do one question where it was like, okay, name a caller to the call-in show. Because, Fenley can name them all. And Prohm and Campbell could probably name every one of them. But,
yep.
You do get your regulars. And I sometimes take the liberty of taking the statement that Cyclone Jerry might have and turning it into a question and asking Coach Campbell. hey, the passion for the teams is what makes Iowa State special.
Yeah.
And call-in shows used to serve a lot different purpose than they do now. Mm-hmm. Because call-in shows used to be really a way for you to get your one chance to talk to the coach. Well, now we've got the tailgate tour and we have club luncheons and stuff like that. There's other opportunities. And then there's so many media opportunities. They make those guys available after practice a lot during the week. And there's press conferences and after the game. And it's like call-in shows were born in a different era, just like coaches' TV shows were born in a different era.
Yeah, that's a great
point. It used to be the Jim Walden show, man. That's how you saw the highlights of what happened in the game last night. And you had no chance to see it before then. Mm-hmm. So at 10:30 in the morning, you woke up and watched that show to see the highlights. And now you don't have to do that. You've seen everything.
I remember when Mac was coach. I mean, just that was must-see TV on a Sunday night, the Dan McCartney show. You had to watch it.
I produced it the first year he was the coach. And so I got to see all Troy Davis's 1995 runs.
Do you remember when they did the deal where they cut out all the huddles and stuff? And it was you could watch the whole game in like 30 minutes or whatever.
Well, we still do it. We still do it, the replay show. It's a one-hour condensed.
When is that on?
It's on Cyclones.tv. We usually air it on Thursday nights
with
the radio call.
I used to watch those religiously.
Yep, it's on Cyclones.tv now. Usually Thursday nights at about like 7. It's a one-hour condensed game replay. You know where that started was basically Notre Dame. I grew up in Chicago, and Notre Dame football, on Sunday morning you'd get – I mean, I wasn't a Notre Dame fan at all, but on Sunday morning you'd get up and they'd say, here's the Notre Dame replay show. And it was Lindsey Nelson. We now move to further action from the third quarter, and there it was. And so that's kind of how that – I think
we really do live in an amazing time when you think about it. I mean, you're a little bit older than I am, but I remember – I mean, I grew up, fortunately, Cubs fans. So WGN had every game. I was lucky there. My dad liked the Braves. TBS had that.
But that's why you're a Braves fan. That's why you're a Cubs fan.
Other than that, other than that, it was your game of the week on Fox. It was whatever. And to be able to go home at night and watch, because I have the package on DirecTV, any game that I want, other than those darn blackouts, which don't get me started on that. Everybody hates that. And there's a question for you since you're a media guy. Is that changing anytime soon? Hopefully the answer is yes. I know Ray Cole's another guy that talks about that too all the time.
And would know a lot more about it than I would.
It just, like in theory, blackouts started because, hey, if it's on TV, you won't come to the game. So to speak. But someone in
when
I
Braves
is
are
probably
in
not going to Chicago most days to see a game.
Well, the White Sox game isn't on tonight, so I think I'll get in the car and drive to Chicago.
And I think we're in the worst spot in the country. We have seven teams within blackout restrictions.
I know. It's amazing.
See, I can't ever watch the Braves when they play the Brewers.
Crazy.
That's like the one series every year that I can't watch the Braves.
Because if that game's on TV, you wouldn't go to Milwaukee and watch it.
I don't get the Milwaukee local.
Right.
When they're the Cubs or the Cardinals, I can watch their local TV deal.
Yeah.
It's just so asinine that like a Braves Brewers
and yet as much as we complain about the games we can't see, like you said, Mark, you can see so many more games than you used to.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be there was like the NBC game of the week.
Yeah.
That was it, man.
Well,
and this example's nowhere better than Iowa State football.
Exactly.
I mean, even when I was in college, like half the games wouldn't be on TV.
We just did that documentary on Troy Davis.
Which I heard is phenomenal. I haven't seen it yet, but well done.
We really had a lot of fun doing it. One of the reasons I wanted to do it was because there's an entire generation of fans that never got to see this guy run the football.
Yeah.
Because the games were not on TV.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were only 30 or 40,000 people at the games, too. I mean, it was the same 30 or 40,000. So those that were there appreciate the heck out of how good he was.
Yeah.
But we call it seeing is believing because now you can see it. Now you can see some of those great runs. But I think going back to the Braves and Cubs part of it, you become a fan of what you can watch.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what Iowa State fought in football in the 90s, early 90s and 80s.
Iowa's on.
Iowa State's on TV more. And they weren't on a ton either, but they were on more.
And even to the radio station, WHO.
And Iowa State wasn't on, you know. And so how did Iowa State close the gap in basketball quickly? Well, they created the Cyclone Television Network.
Winning helps.
But being able to see the games. And now,
Channel 5, yeah.
And now, well, and statewide, you know, other stations across the state would pick up those Cyclone games. And so you had the Cyclone Television Network, and with Johnny Orr, you got it going where people could watch the games. It's hard to become a fan if you're sitting in Dubuque and you can never watch Iowa State. Well, that's one of the great things about Cyclones.tv now we're on a 24/7 channel, you know, in Dubuque and in Davenport, and people can watch us throughout the state. And so I think you're seeing more and more Iowa State fans. I think the fan base is growing, and I think Cyclones.tv is a very small part of that. But I think you become a fan of what you can watch, and that's how you became a Braves fan, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you can watch their games.
Every one of my teams I was a Bulls fan because of WGN.
You could see them.
And I was a Vikings fan because they weren't the Chiefs, and they were on in Clarinda every week.
Yeah.
And they sucked. Like, they were horrible when I grew up. Like, I still do.
I do want you to ask those questions from the listeners, but I wanted to ask you this one thing, and I think I know your answer. Are we right now, as of today, at the pinnacle of Iowa State athletics ever? And with that, I mean facilities, I mean the leadership, I mean the coaches, I mean the fan base, I mean everything. Has it ever been better for Iowa State athletics? Not necessarily just wins and losses.
Right. Because if results, I don't know you're ever going to top the 2000
cumulatively,
season.
Cumulatively, though.
Right.
Has it ever been better than it is today?
I think you're making a good point, and it's when you have stability in place at the top and you've got a great leader, which we have in Jamie Pollard, who really understands a great vision for Iowa State athletics, gives you a chance. And all Jamie wants to do is put his coaches in a position to succeed. He wants to give them every tool he can in their toolbox to have the chance to succeed. And so that's where it's come so far with the facilities and the upgrades. And now nutrition and all these other things are becoming more and more important. And we do have to realize that as Iowa State is improving in those areas, everybody else is too. You know, I mean, it's nobody's unaware of the trends. And so people are reinvesting their money. But I do think Iowa State's in a great place from that. And And the fan base, I think, is maybe at an all-time high as far as numbers. The enrollment is the highest it's been at Iowa State. Those Iowa State graduates stay within the state, so your fan base grows organically.
Yeah.
I just think there's a kind of a sleeping giant mentality there that Matt Campbell liked enough to say, I want to take that job, because Matt Campbell could have gone a lot of places.
Yeah.
But he saw this little sleeping giant at Iowa State and thought, this can be something really cool because of this investment that the fans have, and we're going to go playoff.
I don't know if you travel around, you know a lot of the other teams. I don't know if you've seen this anywhere else, but, and I've said this many times on the podcast, I think one thing that makes Iowa State special, specifically to football, is I don't think there's another place in the country that packs the stands as much equivalent to wins.
Right.
So how many other 3-win, 4-win, 5-win teams around the country have half-empty stands, look like Kansas on a given day, et cetera? Right. That one thing alone makes Iowa State stand out among a lot of other places.
It does, and it's not something that any of us want to hang our hat on. I mean, we're excited that our fans will come through thick and thin, but they have to have hope. You know, you can't just say, hey, we're going to roll out a 3-win team for you this year. Come to watch the games.
Yeah.
You have to believe that you're going to climb that mountain at some point and get there. And I think that's the thing that separates the Iowa State fans, is they hold on to that hope, man. They will not let go of that hope.
Because that means
when they get there, it's going to be so much cooler.
And they have it now.
Yes. I mean, no question. Well, they should with Matt Campbell. I mean, he's sharp, man. This guy knows what he's doing. He's got a great staff, and they're bringing in a better level of athlete, and they're going to get there. I don't know how quickly, but they are going to get there. And so if you're investing in it right now, you're like getting in on the ground floor of something really, really cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully that adds even more fans. But, man, hats off to those fans that have been loyal through the years. But I think, you know, it comes back to Mark a little bit, is just the game day experience that we talked about.
Yep.
Iowa State fans like being with Iowa State fans. They like the camaraderie, win or lose. They like being around each other, especially in wins. But they love the tailgating. They love seeing their friends. They like reuniting. So I think a lot of that, you can go all over the country. You will not find a better tailgating environment than Iowa State has. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I've seen a million stadiums. Nothing's better than what Iowa State has as far as the entire stadium being surrounded with the tents and the color and the pageantry. It's just the coolest. And that, to me, is what keeps people coming. And then winning football can take it a step further, and that's where we need to get, because we can't. They're not going to keep coming.
We don't have to dress up either like they do down in the Southeast. I know you experienced that down in Mississippi.
That was really cool.
Yeah.
That was maybe the coolest thing I've ever done in sports.
You went to Ole Miss, didn't you?
Ole Miss, LSU game day.
Yeah.
Just because it's not better. Too, it's so different. It was like different culture.
Keep in mind, like,
it's like you're in a different country now.
Burgers and brats we got in Iowa State, they're probably cooking alligator down here. You know, like
caviar.
Weird southern fare.
Great about college football.
Yeah, it's just, you know, everywhere's different.
Slice of Americana.
A big part of college football success, too, and obviously this is a small piece, but in my opinion, it's big, versus basketball, is weather. Like Saturday afternoons in the fall, that contributes to everything else.
You're in a good mood to begin with. The sun's out.
You wake up Saturday morning, you got a game to go to. It's nice out. You're like, okay, this will be a fun day.
Before we get to the tweets, we've reached a new low as far as watch lists go. Mike, our friend Mike Green just sent this press release out. He has to. It's his job.
He has to.
Ray Lima has been added to the Polynesian Football Player of the Year watch list.
There's a watch list for everything.
Man.
Well, you know what? I did a story on Ray Lima yesterday. What a good guy.
Yeah,
what
he is. Isn't he
good,
cool?
Humble guy.
I think he's going to be a pretty good football player, too.
Yeah, I think he's going to make a big difference for that defensive line. But he keeps deferring to the seniors and not trying to take the spotlight himself. And I bet Campbell just absolutely loves that guy. He's going to have a good season.
Is it possible to be Polynesian and small? Like they're
just big guys,
crow, huge people, man.
You know, I'm not going there.
Huge.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. I actually meant that in a nice way.
Yeah,
believe
good.
It or not.
All right. The tweets came pouring, and we're already at like 50 minutes here, so we'll get to the ones that I feel like we haven't really covered yet. Jeff wants to know, John, name your Iowa State basketball dream team.
Oh, my dream team basketball. Wow.
Well, we did that one deal the drafting, we had the exact same
that
team.
Was weird because you assigned points, so you could you know, you could take Dedrick Willoughby was like a 4-point guy or whatever, and there was a 5-point. We took we both took Pfizer, I think, or Tinsley. We both had Tinsley.
We had Willoughby. We had Homan at the 5.
Yes.
Cato. We had Cato.
Yep.
And Jeff Greyer.
We did. We picked the same. Yeah. We picked the same guys. And that would be a pretty good dream team right there. But, you know, Hornacek obviously was unbelievable. George Niang, totally special guy. I don't think I could have a team without Monte Morris, at least coming off the bench, and Fred Hoiberg. But man, Jamal Tinsley will be on my team, period, no matter what, because that guy was so dynamic with the basketball in his hands. We talked about he never lost a game in Hilton Coliseum. He never lost to Kansas. He said it was just another gym about Allen Fieldhouse. How many guys could get,
gym,
could get away, say that one year, come back and back it up the next year.
Yep.
You know, just and those were good Kansas teams. They weren't dogs, man. And so Tinsley was just at a different level as far as confidence and playground and fun. You know, we talk about fun. Games are fun. He made it fun. And but I don't know. I'd have to give some thought to, like, saying, okay, here's the five. I got to have a 13, 14-man roster.
Oh, yeah.
There's too many guys I like.
You know what would be an interesting column, Williams, for you to write on that subject would be the Iowa State dream team that could have been. All the players that we actually had a legit shot at, like your McDermott's, et cetera, or the rumored guys that were
like
coming,
that never came.
Glenn Rice.
That never came.
Then the Mac era.
Rashad Vaughn, you know, guys like, it's between us and them. And it's like,
Tristan Thompson, he took an official visit to Iowa State.
Really? Jimmy Butler.
And then Harrison Barnes.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a lot in that McDermott era where they were so close.
You just wrote the column. There you go. You just got to put it out there.
Yeah, that's good.
Absolutely.
Jameson wants to know your favorite non-Iowa State sports moment.
Ooh. Okay, two things come to mind. Going to Wrigley Field for the first time as a fan when I was a kid, because I'd watch the games on TV. My dad took me to a Cubs-Reds game when it was the big red machine.
Yeah.
You know, and that was just cool because TV doesn't do it justice. When you walk in and you see the ivy and you see the grass and it's greener than you pictured, and just everything is so cool and bigger than life.
Do you remember details of that game?
Yes, without a doubt. I mean, Pete Rose was playing it out there, Tony Perez and all those guys. I was a young kid.
I was fortunate. My first game was against the Padres, and I saw Tony Gwynn go 5-for-5 in that game.
Cool.
The Cubs got beat 8-0. Yeah, they stunk. But it was Wrigley Field.
I took my daughter. My daughters wanted to go to Wrigley Field. They'd never been. So when Anthony Rizzo just got called up by the Cubs. The Cubs were having a horrible year, and they won about 6 or 7 in a row. I took my two daughters. We went and saw the Cubs and the Mets. Had great seats. They got beat 17-1. But to my daughter's credit, we stayed till the last out. So 17-1. That
That's
was
a good memory.
Yeah. But my favorite non-sports or non-Iowa State-related sports thing, and this is a little bit of a long story, but when I was in high school, I had these friends that were brothers. At my church, and one guy was 2 years older than us, and he was considering colleges. He was looking at Virginia and Indiana. That was down to those two, and Virginia had a really good basketball team with a guy named Wally Walker. And so we started the Wally Walker fan club, the three of us. And we followed him at Virginia. They won the ACC tournament. He got drafted by the Blazers, won the NBA championship his rookie year. Went to Seattle, played in the finals the next 2 years. The guy played in the NBA finals his first 3 years in the league. And by that time, we had like 15 of us in our church that would sit up at late and watch the Seattle Sonics games, you know. And so anyway, long story, Wally Walker knew about this fan club because we'd write him letters and stuff. We had these membership cards and T-shirts and all this. So when he came to Chicago for a Bulls game, he said, meet me at gate 3.5. That's the player entrance. We went down to gate 3.5, stood there in the cold. Here comes the Seattle Sonics bus. Wally Walker takes us down on the floor, introduces us to everybody.
Wow.
Lenny Wilkins was the coach. It was just awesome. And he was so great. And he was from Pennsylvania. His parents, and this was when you didn't charter, you know, right out away. You stayed. You flew out commercial the next day. So Wally and his mom and dad drove to Glen Ellen from Chicago, which is about a 25-minute drive. and we had a little reception for him that night.
Wow.
The guy came to Glen Ellen and was part of that, and it was just really cool. He ended up being the Sonics general manager for a long time.
Wally Walker did.
Yeah,
huh?
Very intelligent guy. Huh. And so the Wally Walker fan club. And I remember the Seattle Post and Telliger, sir, which doesn't exist anymore, their writer came down and did a story on us, and it started out, where will it end, this Wally Walker phenomenon? And the guy wasn't a star or anything, but it was just kind of fun to do something like
that.
The
good news about having guests on the show is that they either are going to Google things like the Gainesville Ripper or Wally Walker.
Everybody's like, hey,
by the way, was that game, you mentioned that Cubs game, was it in 2012? Are we talking that recent?
Oh, when Rizzo just got called up?
The 17-1 game.
Yes, yep. I think that's probably right.
June 27, 2012.
That sounds right. You found it?
I Googled it, yeah.
17-1.
Yep.
Yeah, game could have gone either way.
2012.
Scott has a question about an Iowa State legend. He wants to know if you have any good Rod Bodholt stories you can share with us.
Who doesn't?
I have one. He shot my high school highlight tape at Ames High back in 97.
Rod and
99
Jeff.
99 would have been 96. He shot that.
Rod and Jeff Grummer. Great guys, and they've been doing the coaches shows forever.
Talk about unsung like heroes behind the scenes at Iowa State.
Hey, I'll tell you what. If you get a chance to watch this Troy Davis documentary, those two guys put it together. They did all the editing. We did a bunch of interviews. We probably talked to 30 people, but they just can work magic in the editor. And they're such good guys that have no egos, great sense of humor. They're just a blast to be around. I love those two guys. And when I first went to Channel 5, one of the reasons I was so excited about going there was because I was going to get to work with Rod and Jeff. You know, Keith Murphy left Channel 5 to go to Channel 13.
Yep.
I left Channel 8 to go to Channel 5.
Yep.
It was like Steve Martin, or like John Candy and Steve Martin in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You're going the wrong way, you know.
Yep.
I don't know what that means.
So, well, I've seen it. I'm with you.
Okay. So anyway. But I got to work with Rod and Jeff for about a month, and then they came to the state fair where I had to be, and they came out and they said, hey, guy, sorry, John, we're leaving.
Yep.
We're starting our own business.
It's not you, it's me.
So I not only lost one, I lost both of them at the same time, and that was a bummer. But they were such good guys and still are, and great, great friends.
Love those guys. Outside of sports, this is from Jeff. Oh, wait, we already asked a question from Jeff. Let's get to somebody else.
Come on, Jeff.
This is interesting. I think I know where you're going to go with this. But Joe wants to know, a little backstory here. How often do coaches at Iowa State go to each other for help? Like the head coaches?
Yeah, I think they're it happens. I mean, I don't think they specifically go seek help from the other coaches. But I think that the other coaches will sometimes come to them and say, hey, keep your head up, you know, and encourage them. And sometimes that leads to an exchange of ideas. And the best coaches are open-minded.
Correct.
You know, they don't feel like they have all the answers. And that's what I love about Matt Campbell. He is always like a sponge. You know, I heard a story about him and Mike Gundy out of the middle of the field before the Iowa State-Oklahoma State game last year, where he's just asking him, how'd you do it? How'd you get it going here? And he's just sitting there absorbing all this information. And this conversation's going on and on. And then Gundy's like, I got to go coach my team, man. He goes, if you want to call me, you know, give me a call. We can talk about it some more.
But I wonder if in that conversation, Gundy said, it helps to have a billionaire.
Yes. If you have a teaspoon pickings, that helps. But I know that like Prohm and Fenley and Fred Hoiberg and Coach Fenley, you know, because they work in the same building and they see each other a lot, they would sit and exchange ideas. Absolutely. And they respect each other, and that's why.
Well, that one year, Bill even went to the NCAA tournament when they didn't make it. He went to Colorado.
That's right.
Basically, just to support Steve.
Yes, which is awesome. I mean, stuff like that is
I know how much that meant to Steve.
And I think it's pretty unique to Iowa State. I mean, people can say, well, we have that camaraderie everywhere. Trust me, it's not always like that.
Well, I credit Jamie and Mary a lot, too, because I feel like that tailgate tour really brings those coaches
together.
It's kind of built that for that reason, too.
I'll go back even further, Chris. I credit Dan McCarney, too, because Dan, you talk about genuine people, Dan honestly cared what was going on with the softball program. He wanted to know if tennis had a recruit in, he wanted to meet that recruit, say hello. And what an impression, you know? I mean, and just he started this feeling of we're all in this thing together that I think carried over. And Jamie has done a great job of taking that and running with it. And the tailgate tour is a great example of that. And everybody gets close because they're on the bus together and they get to know each other better because you're all in different buildings across the campus and you don't see each other as often as you'd like. And it's a pretty special bond that the coaches have at Iowa State.
Matthew, you're going to have a hard time with this one. Matthew wants to know who would win the 99-2000 Cyclones versus the 13-14 Cyclones.
Oh, man. Why do people have to do this to me?
It's getting late, so this will be your final question.
Okay.
Then we'll let you off the hook.
I'll say best of seven series. 99-2000 team wins 4-3.
I agree with you for what it's worth.
Yeah, I mean, I think they would split most of the way. That was a great team. But 99-2000 team, I mean, they won 32 games. They went to the Elite Eight. They were this close to a national championship. Yeah. And they had Marcus Fizer, who was, without a doubt, at the end of that season, the best player in college basketball. Nobody was playing better than Marcus Fizer the last half of that season. You had Jamal Tinsley, who was one of the all-time incredible players. Cantrell Horton, Stevie Johnson, Paul Shirley. I mean, that was a really good collection of guys.
It's so hard.
Mike Nurse was a great player.
We just went through, and John actually, by the way, to credit you, helped Bloom and I walk through the seating on this one night when we were watching the NBA draft over at Whiskey River, but we just did that field of 64, you know?
Yeah.
It's so hard to compare eras.
Yes.
Like, it just...
It's very hard.
I mean, we just had... Niang won, by the way. It ended last night.
Yeah.
And Niang beats Jeff Grayer.
Hard to argue with George.
Yeah, I can't argue with that.
No.
But I would guess a lot of the people who voted for George probably never saw Jeff Grayer play. So it's like...
Yeah, and that can alter it, but...
Well, obviously, we're just doing this for fun.
If you picked George Niang, if that was your vote... Man, more power to you. You couldn't have picked a better guy and a better player. I mean, he was phenomenal, and I have no complaints whatsoever with anybody that picks George. And you know, you're a fan of what you can see. Well, that includes your age, you know. And so we can. But I like it when people appreciate the past, even if they didn't experience it themselves. To understand what Gary Thompson did for Iowa State, I think, is a valuable part of the whole Iowa State experience. And
that book about his biography, the Chuck Offenberger book,
it was good.
It's one of my favorite books I've ever read.
And it's not so much about Gary Thompson, the basketball player. It's small town life in Iowa. You're from Clarinda. You can totally relate to the stories in there about going roller skating and all that stuff. It was really cool.
The shittily D. I got one last question for you because I think this is relevant to me and a lot of people listening. For basketball and for football. So you got a fan, an Iowa State fan, that wants to go on one road trip to a football game and one road trip for a basketball game. You've seen every arena. You've seen every town. What are the ones for football and for basketball that you would say they need to go check it out?
Well, basketball, you got to go to Allen Fieldhouse. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obvious, but it's a no-brainer, especially if you win like Iowa State did last year. That feeling of winning in that building is so satisfying. Nothing can top that. And I think for the same reasons, you know, in football, and I haven't seen an Iowa State win at Oklahoma, okay? But that would be
few
the place.
Few people have.
That would be the place that it would be really, really special to walk out of there with a win. You know, Texas A&M was unique in all the different rituals and the stuff that went around the game. Yeah. We talk about how every part of the country's different in the tailgating and all that stuff. Texas A&M was a really unique, special place. Nebraska was fun in the way that it was just a religion there.
Intimidating is a word, too, I think. Being
but
a,
I like,
the,
I mean, I love going to Oklahoma State. There's a lot of places that are special. It's hard to just pick one like you can with basketball, but with basketball, without a doubt, it's Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah, we went down there 2 years ago, I think. Maybe it was last. Anyway, went down there and not an intimidating-looking building from the outside. You're like, that's it?
Yeah.
And then you get in, like, it looks like a gym, but it holds a lot of people somehow.
You're now entering the fog.
It's surprising how that works.
Well, and they're packed in there.
But you know, like, when the opponent's like hype video gets you jacked up and you're cheering for the other team, you're like, all right.
And they
got something special.
They intimidate that you before you even sit down because you had to walk through like all their national championship trophies and the Hall of Fame and all that stuff.
They play that video and they play it at about 1,000 decibels, man.
I mean, blows your ears out. Invented the game, for God's sake.
They'll tell you.
Yeah.
Just ask.
Yeah, just ask. John, thanks, man. We appreciate it. I know it's a busy time.
It's fun
of
visiting
year.
With you guys.
It was a lot of fun. Mark, the real estate world.
Yeah.
Do you know what we're diving into today?
I do not.
Okay, but it doesn't matter because these are actually really interesting.
It's
I'm not
good.
Just telling you that. It's good.
I promise you it's good and informational.
I listen to them every week because, well, I edit it and I have to.
Yeah.
But they're always interesting. So check it out. Mark's going to tell you a little bit about the real estate world next here on the podcast.
Hey, guys. Mark here. Hope you enjoyed that latest issue of the podcast. I'm here to talk a little bit of real estate, and today I want to talk about cutting the cord. I deal with this one all the time. I meet with people that are dissatisfied with their current agent, and they want to switch to us and help them sell a house or maybe buy a house. It doesn't really matter. But if a contract's been signed, people think that they're stuck. Really common question we get is, we'd like to list with you, but we're under this contract. We'll have to wait until it's over. What do we do? The reality is, guys, you can do something about this. I know, and I'll be upfront and honest, oftentimes it's awkward. Most people that have to fire an agent don't fire people for a living, so they're not used to it. And to fire someone, it's uncomfortable, but you need to remember the goal. And the goal is to sell a house or buy a house. And if the agent's not performing, not doing the job, you're only hurting yourselves by sticking with someone. You no longer trust in their ability to get the job done, and you want to make a change. The simplest thing you can do is simply email them, text them, call them. Most people want to avoid the phone call, obviously. But text them or email them and say, listen, this isn't going the way that I wanted it to go. I'd like to make a change. I'd like to be let out of my contract. Leave it that simple. You don't need to go into great detail about why. You don't need to say who you're hiring. You just simply say, I want to go in another direction. Now, some agents might say, okay. Other agents might say, you're under a contract. I expect you to honor it. If that's the case, you can push a little bit at that point. Say, listen, you promised this. You didn't do this. Really, if you want to press it, say, I don't want to have to talk to your broker about this. Though that's like somebody saying, I don't want to have to talk to your dad when you're a little kid. Those are the words you don't want to hear. When an agent hears that you might speak to their broker, that means that the broker is going to come to them. They're going to have a discussion. They're going to get maybe a slap on the wrist. They're going to be told to let you go, et cetera. So if all else fails, mention a broker, mention talking to a broker, and a lot of agents will chicken out at that point and get out of the way. Again, did you sign a contract? Yes. Do they have to let you out? No. But if you find the right pressure points, and those pressure points would be, you're not doing a good job. You promised something you didn't deliver on. I want to talk to your broker. Those types of things, more often than not, agents will get out of the way. At Charterhouse, we don't ever deal with this because, one, we sell most of the things that we list, but two, we have a very simple philosophy that says we want to do business with people who want to do business with us. That means it's a two-way street. Both parties are in alignment on what they want. They want to work with each other, and that's part of the reason we get great reviews, because we're working with people that like us, that chose us on purpose, that want to be in business with us. But again, just to reiterate, if you're in a contract with an agent, don't necessarily assume you have to continue to be with that agent through the contract. If you need to make a change, go ahead and force the issue and try to do that. All right, guys, that's it on that topic. Again, if we can help you anywhere in the country, find an agent to help you buy or sell, we'd love to do that. It's a very simple referral system we have that allows us to get paid a little bit on your transaction, which allows us to, again, in turn, finance Psycho Fanatic, continue to advertise, etc. That's it, guys. We'll see you next week.